leaned back in his chair. He tried to keep his voice level, but he sensed his cousin had the upper ground, and Daniel was scared of how he might use it. "That's why you can't return to the house. It's not safe for you there. You understand that, right?" "It's not safe for anyone there." Kyle's eyes narrowed. "You're planning on going back, aren't you?" "That's not important right now." "Hell, you've already been back. That's why you're visiting me now, isn't it? To try to protect that murderer." Kyle pressed his thumb and forefinger into the bridge of his nose. "You're such a moron. I had nowhere else to stay." Daniel hadn't meant to snap, but the words left him more harshly than intended. He cleared his throat and continued in a softer voice. "You changed the lock on your apartment." "Whatever, I'll give you a new key. Just don't go back to the madman's house, okay?" A sense of wariness drew over Daniel. "Why do you want me to stay away? So you can go back yourself when you're out of hospital? Bran has been nothing but polite and considerate to me. He just doesn't like people digging through his stuff and stealing his family's heirlooms." "Haven't you been listening?" Kyle slapped an open hand onto the tray. Tea sloshed out of the mug and pooled on the plastic. "He's a murderer! Insanity ran through the whole damn family, and it infected his brain worst of all. It won't take him much to snap." "You're lying." Kyle snorted and snatched up his phone. He swiped a finger across the screen and began reading. "He got shipped from school to school when his fellow students mysteriously died. He was always implicated, but there was never enough proof, so they just moved him on to be someone else's problem. After he returned to the family home, he only maintained peace for 2 weeks before bludgeoning his mother to death in their garden. Following her murder, he traveled to the nearest town and slaughtered anyone he encountered in a rage of bloodlust." Kyle lowered the phone. "Those were peasants, women and kids, Dan. People who had done nothing wrong." Daniel couldn't feel his fingers. He tried to see the article Kyle was reading from, but the phone's text was too small. "Yes, he killed his mother. She'd murdered his younger sister, so he killed her. He wouldn't have attacked innocents. He's not..." "Oh, boy. He's told you a wonderfully sanitized version of what happened, hasn't he?" Kyle threw his head back in a cackling laugh. "His mother didn't kill the sister. His mother had spent her life trying to protect the girl. The mansion was a short walk from a small village, and the townspeople were superstitious up to their eyeballs. One year, a famine hit them hard, so they decided a witch was cursing them. And who was the most likely candidate for being a witch? The little rich girl who blistered in the sun. So they dragged her down to the churchyard and burnt her." Daniel's head rushed. He pressed his hands to his temples, trying to still it. He remembered Bran's expressions from the previous day. He'd looked crushed with grief when telling the story about his mother and sister. "You've got it wrong. The mother was deranged and unstable. She killed her daughter." "Nuh-uh." Kyle wiggled the phone, eyebrows lifted. "I've been doing a lot of reading. This history site says Eliza Myricks was shy and chronically anxious, but she doted over her family and even overcame her phobia of doctors to invite one into the house to treat Annalise." Timid, riddled with phobias, spending her life trying to protect Annalise. Daniel tried to mesh this image of Eliza together with the one he'd built over the previous days. He thought of her fingers scratching at the tower door and the quiet, gasping breaths. "A person like that would be incredibly easy to manipulate by a strong-willed psychopath, don't you think?" Kyle's smile sent shivers through Daniel. "Someone like Bran." His mouth was dry, but swirling his tongue through it didn't moisten it. "If you're so certain that's what happened, prove it. You said he attacked a town. Which one? Here or Arbor?" "Neither. It's called Flinton. It's a ghost town now. Just a short walk through the forest. The Myricks family's wealth made it thrive, until Bran attacked them, of course." Kyle rubbed a finger over the phone's case. "Apparently, it was pretty brutal. He unleashed some kind of curse on them, and no one was spared. Can you imagine that, Dan? Innocents slaughtered because of the sins of a few town elders. Like I said, he's a psychopath. Daniel didn't know where to turn. I can't trust Kyle. I can't trust Bran. How am I supposed to know what's the truth? I've never heard of Flinton before, and I'm pretty sure I would have after living here my whole life. Can I have a look at that article on your phone? I have an easier way to prove it. Kyle's smirk was infuriating. Look at the coins he gave you. The family must have minted them or something, because they've got a map on the back. It doesn't just show the house, but the town as well. I wouldn't lie to you, Daniel. We're basically like brothers. We need to stick together, don't we? Daniel blinked at his cousin, as if seeing him for the first time. The coins. I'll be out of my job for a while once they release me from the hospital. It'll probably take a few months of recuperation, I guess. He shrugged and grimaced. But I've been thinking. You can come back and stay with me. Sell off those coins the creep gave you. We can live off of them while I get better and you look for a new job. Depending on what they're worth, we could get you some nicer things. A new TV, maybe. Daniel stood. Anger had settled deep in his stomach, but it wasn't the burning, fiery type he'd experienced before. It felt heavy and cold, like a solid block of ice, the kind that would take months to melt. Kyle, how do you know there's a map on the back of the coins? The man's mouth tightened. You stole it, didn't you? He tightened his fists until his fingers shook from the strain. I thought I'd lost it in the pub, but you'd pocketed it. You're going to be a pedant about this, are you? Kyle grimaced. Can't you see I'm trying to help you? Or is your head too far up your ass? Daniel had never wanted to hit someone as much as Kyle's smug face seemed to invite it. He squeezed the urge into a tight ball of loathing as he crossed to the door. Kyle called after him, the words growing increasingly faint as long strides carried Daniel down the hallway and towards the hospital's exit. Oh yeah, okay, a dramatic exit. Get over yourself, Dan. You need me. Hey, stop walking. I'm talking to you. You can have the stupid coin back if it means that much to you. Do you hear me? Hey, come back, bastard. I was such an idiot. He's never had my best interests at heart. He only pretended to when he thought he could squeeze something out of me. Daniel forced cold hands into his jacket pockets as he stepped into the street. Cars in a nearby jam blared their horns, but the noise seemed muffled to Daniel. He felt shaky and lost. Kyle had lied to him, stolen from him, and sabotaged him. But what if he's right? What if Bran has been lying to me too? He wanted to keep walking, but he had no place to go. He chose a street at random and followed it. Gridlocked roads and crowded stores gradually gave way to the dirt lanes and woods Daniel had grown familiar with. His quick steps slowed as he found himself at Tilbrook Street. If he continued along the path, he could be at Craven Manor in 40 minutes. Or he could turn around and return to the town. I need to know the truth, and not just from a web page or a second-hand account. I want to see proof with my own eyes, and there's one easy way to do that. Daniel fished the remaining gold coin out of his pocket. On one side was the family crest. On the other were the coursing lines and bumps he had assumed was meaningless texture. Kyle was right, though. Now that he knew what he was looking at, Daniel realized the marks created a crude map. He held the coin up to the light and squinted to make out the details. The lines had to be roads. They led to a triangle in the center of the disc, which would represent the manor. A mushroom-like shape in the lower left area would be the massive dead oak tree at the fork in the road. Based on those coordinates, Daniel was also able to pinpoint the road Joel took to reach the house. A multitude of smaller triangles on the coin's lower right side were so delicate that Daniel almost overlooked them. He pressed his back to the nearest tree and rotated the coin so that its ridges and gullies caught in the light. If one triangle symbolizes Craven Manor, a group of them must be the town. A line branched off Tilbrook Street and led to the cluster. If Daniel could find the path, he could follow it to the town without passing through Craven Manor's grounds or beneath Bran's watchful eyes. Daniel looked behind himself. Thick plant cover butted up against both sides of the path. Vines tangled between gnarled pines. There was no sign of the road. It might have fallen out of use at the same time as the road to Craven Manor. In that case, it would be overgrown. Daniel hung close to the path's edge and skimmed the plants and the ground for any signs of a disused track. 200 years could do a lot to remove humanity's meddling. It had done a remarkable job swallowing the flagstones leading to Craven Manor, and it seemed to have been just as thorough in erasing the path to Flinton. Daniel moved at a crawl. The woods seemed impenetrable, and by the time Daniel had covered the same ground 3 times, he was starting to think the track was permanently gone. He stopped to lean against a trunk and wipe sweat off of his forehead. A small fallen tree caught his eye. It didn't match its surroundings. Daniel tilted his head. The tree was narrow and strangely blocky, and when straight, it wouldn't have been any taller than his head. A signpost. Daniel grinned as he dug leaf litter away from the post's base. As he'd hoped, a mostly crumbled sign protruded from the ground. The words were long gone, but he was certain it had once pointed to the mystery town. There was no sign of stones among the tree roots, so Daniel guessed it had been a dirt path. He struck out blind and hoped he was moving in approximately the right direction. Shoot for the moon. If you miss, you'll die horribly in the void of space. A frightened chuckle escaped him. He didn't fancy freezing to death in the forest, but the sun was only just past its zenith. He had time to retreat back to the road if he couldn't find Flinton within a couple of hours. Provided I can find my way back. He was beginning to wish he'd brought a ball of string or paint to mark his path. But then his foot slipped into a hollow. As he straightened himself, he realized the ground wasn't perfectly even. A long, snake-like bump rose above the forest floor, an arm's length wide. He peered through the trees. The ridge continued as far as he could see. The road to Flinton had been raised to protect it from floods and snows. It wasn't more than a foot, but as long as he kept to the high ground, he wouldn't become lost. That was easier said than done. The plants were thick to the point of being smothering. Several times, Daniel had to slide off the road to wend his way around a nasty snarl, and every step was a struggle. He knew he had to be on the right path, but worry began to niggle at him as the sun fell lower and grim gray clouds replaced the clear skies. When do I call it quits? How dark does it have to get before I give up and try another day? The answer wasn't pretty. Daniel knew he would stay out as long as it took to either corroborate Kyle's story or exonerate his friend. He hadn't expected the word friend to enter his mind when thinking about the Myrixes. The relationship had been full of doubt from its early days, but when he searched his soul, he realized he'd become so invested in the family that he had started to think of them as friends. It wasn't a close sit-for-hours-and-chat kind of friendship, but a loyalty existed, the kind that had made Daniel instinctively bristle against Kyle's accusations. That's a dangerous path to go down. You trusted Kyle far longer than you should have. Has Bran really earned your loyalty? Daniel hated the circular argument he'd become trapped in. He hadn't had a close, honest friendship since his grandmother's passing, and it wasn't for lack of trying. It left him feeling like a man adrift in the ocean, clutching at seaweed and sea foam, no matter how many times they collapsed under his fingers. His foot slipped, and he clutched at a tree to keep his balance. He'd spent the previous moments fixated on the ground beneath his feet, and when he finally looked up, he saw dark shapes clustered among the trees to either side. They were large and blocky, and it took a moment to realize what he was looking at. Houses. Chapter 21. Daniel took a deep breath and left the trail to approach the nearest building to his left. The stone house was small, about the size of his groundskeeper's cottage, and its walls were painted black by grime. Part of its roof had collapsed, and one wall bent inwards. That, at least, proved part of Kyle's claim. There was a town, and it had been abandoned. Daniel got as close to the building as the vegetation would allow him, and tried to look through the window. Everything he could see was crumbled and rotted beyond recognition. He clambered back to the road. More houses and fences flanked him as he moved closer to the town's center. They were all relics, barely recognizable amongst the living trees. The stone structures had mostly survived, but Daniel also passed bare foundations and piles of decay, which must have been wooden buildings. The plants became thinner as brown, dry, waist-high grass covered the road. Daniel suspected he'd entered the town proper. The ground was too firmly packed to allow much to grow, but thin, struggling trees had still managed to put down roots. Dilapidated houses, at least 100 of them, spread across the plain. Larger buildings gathered in a cluster 50 yards ahead to mark what had once been the main street. Spanish moss hung from rooftops, and their long tendrils shifted in the wind. Most of the stones were covered in lumpy moss, and all but a handful of windows were broken. One house had a dozen metal bird cages strung around its front door. They still clinked together, though rust had muffled and deepened the sound. Daniel rose up onto his toes to see inside the cages and found a cluster of tiny bones buried in the grime. Many roofs had partially or fully collapsed, disguising the house's contents, but what he could see was broken by age. Tables, chairs, even support beams were collapsing under the weight of time. Daniel stopped by one of the more intact houses and rested his fingers on a windowsill. The moss was spongy under his touch, and flakes crumbled away. He stretched to see over the remaining glass fragments and caught a glimpse of a lumpy blue shape in the room's darkest corner. It felt out of place in the derelict room. The object was large, maybe as large as he was, and propped against the wall at a strange angle. He couldn't see it properly from the window, so he skirted around the building. A stone step led to the front door, which hung at an angle, supported by one hinge. A quick yank wrenched it free. A musty, bitter smell assaulted Daniel as soon as he entered the room. It was like inhaling the aftermath of a fire, but instead of soot, he tasted age. He gagged and bent over until the nausea faded, then pressed deeper into the house, towards where the strange shape had been. Remnants of life were buried among the decay. What might have once been a doll had become a gray lump, half sunk into the floor. Teacups lay broken on the wood, fallen from their shelf, which had cracked. The curtains had fused to the walls. He found the blue shape in the dining room's corner. The room was dim, and Daniel had to squint as he approached the object. It was some kind of mold-smothered cloth, covering... Oh no! Fingers curled out of folds in the fabric. Strands of dry brown hair poked free. As Daniel circled the shape, he saw the face. Skin had turned black and sunken into the bones. The eye sockets were empty, but their shadowed pits seemed to stare at him. Black fungus spilled out of the body, exploding from any nick or tear in the skin, to give it a horrific bulging shape. The fungal growth held a bizarre bubbled texture, like freshly poured tar or over-whipped cream. Daniel pressed a hand across his mouth and backed away. His thighs hit the corner of a chair, and the structure broke apart. With a yelp, he leapt around it, then he ran for the door. He didn't breathe deeply until he was back outside, panting and gasping in the cool air. The image of the dead woman being swallowed in billows of black mold was still clear in his mind.
She was just left there. No funeral, no burial. She hasn't even decayed properly. Kyle was right. Something unnatural happened in this town. Something evil.
Every building was crumbling with age. Daniel hadn't thought it was strange before, but as he straightened, he realized the decay wasn't as far advanced as he would have expected from 2 centuries of neglect. Morbid obsession drew him deeper into the network of buildings. He kept a forearm covering his mouth and nose any time he leaned through a window or open door. 2 houses on, he found another cluster of bodies. A woman lay in bed, 2 childlike shapes cradled in her arms, and a figure wearing men's clothing sat in a chair beside her. He'd inclined his head to rest it next to hers, as though the family had been embracing one final time. Their skin was darkened and stretched tight, but it still bulged strangely in places. A watermelon-sized lump had grown on the man's neck, then ruptured, and the sticky fungus spilled out and ran in a tendril to the floor. Where it touched the stone, it seemed to absorb into the building and spread through its structure. "The buildings aren't covered in moss. They've been infected." Daniel felt sickened that he'd touched it. He scrubbed his fingers on his jeans, although he knew the paranoia was likely coming too late. If the black substance was still infectious, he'd been thoroughly exposed to it. The farther he went, the more bodies he found. Some had perished in bed. Some sat in chairs or collapsed across the floor. Daniel found a human-sized lump of the ichor in the street. Weeds had grown around and through it, and their stems had been distorted into a grisly, mottled color.
"These deaths weren't natural. The fungus has preserved them somehow."
He stumbled on, simultaneously not wanting to see any more and unable to look away. Larger buildings marked where the main street ran. Daniel recognized what he thought would have to be a bank, a general store, a farrier, and a church. Signs of death were more common there. Clumps of the black gunk collected in doorways, on steps, and in the street. A strip of leather cord ran from a large mass to the railing beside the bar, and Daniel suspected it had once been used to harness a horse. Animals, apparently, hadn't been immune either. The church was affected worse than other buildings. The fungal growth spread up its sides and across its peaked roof, almost like a blanket. Only the cross poked free. Daniel approached cautiously. His nerves were wound tight, and sweat beaded over his skin despite the cold day. The church was one of the largest buildings in the town. He thought it must have once had stained glass windows, but they had long been broken out of their frames. Its doors were missing, and the interior was a nest of shadow. Daniel crept closer, past the rusted metal bars that had marked the church's fence, and up the 2 steps to see inside the building. Bodies had littered the rest of the town, but it was nothing compared to the church's insides. Everywhere he looked were white teeth, bony hands, and matted hair. Daniel keeled over and clutched his hands around his chest to shield against the shock and nausea. There had to be more than 100 corpses inside the building. Some seemed to be reaching for the windows, as though trying to crawl through. Others were grouped at the back of the building, at the altar, and behind the pulpit. Still others had died in the pews and become permanently affixed to the decayed wood. Daniel closed his eyes and turned to face the town. He visualized how it must have once looked: sturdy, humble buildings, clear dirt roads, and gardens full of life. He imagined hearing wailing shrieks and broken yells as something evil moved from building to building, striking down life wherever it existed.
Some would have made a stand with pitchforks and kitchen knives. Others would have fled for the only place they felt safe, the church. He opened his eyes. The church doors were missing from their hinges. He retraced his steps down into the weedy yard and found them, two massive, heavy blocks of wood lying amongst the weeds. Massive claw marks scored the doors. Daniel's mouth dried as he looked across them. The scores were longer than his arm and at least 2 inches deep. The monster tore the doors off their hinges and threw them aside like they weighed nothing. He tried not to imagine the terror the townspeople must have felt as the creature stepped across the threshold and claimed the lives inside. He couldn't stand being in the wretched town any longer. He ducked his head and jogged through the scene of a centuries-old slaughter. Questions warred for space in his mind. Why hadn't he ever heard of Flinton or its fate before? Why had the bodies just been left to rot in their houses? A path to his right disappeared into the forest, and Daniel knew it had to be the road leading to Craven Manor. He turned away from it and towards the path he'd arrived on. He didn't feel as though he could breathe properly until he was back inside the smothering plant life and away from the horrible, overwhelming decay. He had the answer he'd been seeking, at least. Kyle had told the truth about Flinton, and he'd likely told the truth about the cause of death as well. Bran had shown Daniel only his cat, crow, and dog forms, but Daniel shuddered as he imagined what other beasts Craven Manor's owner was capable of creating. A bear made entirely of shadow, an oversized wolf, or perhaps something Daniel had never seen before. Some otherworldly nightmare full of hatred and cruelty, breaking windows and crushing roofs as it swept between houses. He admitted to bashing his mother's skull in with a rock in the garden. I should have taken that as a warning that he has no compunction about murder in cold blood. It was growing too dark to see the path clearly, but Daniel refused to slow down. He had a desperate, itching need to get away from both the town and Craven Manor, and he didn't care how many times he tripped over exposed roots or got snagged in scratching vines. Bran had lost his strength in the last 200 years. His animal forms were all desperately thin and old, and most of the time his human body could barely lift anything heavier than a flower. The small bouquet of wildflowers outside Annalise's crypt gave Daniel momentary pause. It was hard to reconcile the image of a bloodthirsty killer with the man who had stayed to care for his sister. And Annalise clearly trusted him. When Daniel had asked her about her brother, she'd smiled. Maybe Annalise doesn't know what Bran did to the town. If Kyle's story was accurate, the incident in Flinton had happened after her death. She could be ignorant of Bran's true nature, and maybe that was why he was so kind to her. Even killers wanted to be thought of as heroes. It made a lot of sense. Bran was polite and considerate towards anyone who was on his side. He only showed his crueler aspects if his morals were questioned or his secrets challenged. Like what Kyle had done. Daniel felt sick. Once again, he'd put faith in a person, only to find out he'd picked the wrong side. It wasn't too late, though. He was away from Craven Manor. With the gold coins, he could travel somewhere Bran wouldn't ever find him. He could rent an apartment, maybe even buy a cheap car, and finally be able to get a job and straighten out his life. Daniel staggered as he stubbed his toe against a fallen log, and frowned as he hopped around it. The plan sounded good, but it left him feeling uneasy. He'd earned the first 2 coins with the work he'd done around Annalise's tomb, but the second payment had been in advance for the week of labor yet to come. His eyes were sore from stress. Daniel wanted to rub at them, but he still couldn't forget the feel of the bubbling black fungus under his fingers. He blinked furiously instead. "You can't give up the coins," They might be the difference between having a normal life or becoming trapped on the streets again. Besides, it's not like Bran needs them. Keeping the money still felt wrong. Daniel tried shrugging, but the uncomfortable twinge wouldn't go away. He was taking money that rightfully didn't belong to him. The fact that he was taking it from an evil man didn't make his conscience any lighter. I'll sleep on it. Tomorrow might bring a clearer idea of what I need to do. The vegetation finally cleared, and Daniel found himself back on Tilbrook Street. He turned left towards the town. Indecision and loneliness ate at him. He wished he had someone he could talk to, a kind ear that would listen and give honest, unselfish advice. Someone like his grandmother. Daniel stared at the moon slowly rising above the trees. There was someone in his life who matched that description, in a way. She wasn't the most conventional place to look for help, but she might be the best. After all, Daniel remembered her telling him about the years she'd spent in the local historical society. He pulled up his collar to shield against the wind chill and quickened his steps towards Mrs. Kirshner's apartment. Chapter 22. Daniel shuffled his feet as he stood on the doorstep of apartment 612. He felt painfully self-conscious. Leaves and grime had gathered in his hair, and brushing his fingers through it hadn't done much to improve the situation. His jeans were in dire need of a wash, and thorns and sharp branches had nicked holes in his jacket. The door rattled as the occupant unlocked it, and a second later, Mrs. Kirshner's wrinkled face was squinting up at him.
"Daniel! You are back, Daniel! I have been missing you!"
A smile came easily, and some of the tension left Daniel's muscles. "I've missed you too, Mrs. Kirshner. Have you been well?"
"Yes, yes! Come look!"
She seized his sleeve and tugged him into the apartment, even though she was short enough that he could easily see over her fluffy white hair.
"Someone give me gift. Money under the door. Look!"
Daniel followed her finger, and a laugh burst out of him. Mrs. Kirshner had invested part of his money in a gigantic cat climbing tree. It was a maze of tunnels, boxes, and ledges that reached almost to the ceiling. She'd placed it into the room's corner, where it clashed hilariously with her old-fashioned, sparse furniture. Her gray cat lounged on one of the highest ledges. "Alonzo looks happy," Daniel said, as the magnificent creature blinked down at him.
"Yes, Alonzo is happy, and I am happy."
Her eyes sparkled.
"My biscuits have cranberries in them tonight. You can stay for a bit, yes? Have tea with me?"
"I'd love that." Daniel cleared his throat and shuffled his feet. "And, actually, this is going to sound very rude, but I need somewhere to stay tonight."
"Daniel, stay here."
She patted his shoulder on the way past and made herself busy in the tiny kitchenette preparing tea.
"Daniel is good boy."
"Thank you so much. I'll pay you back when I can." She made shushing noises as she dropped tea bags into two cups.
"Daniel keeps me company. He is like grandson. He is always welcome."
Daniel sank into the small wooden chair beside Mrs. Kirshner's recliner. The cat tree wasn't the only change he saw. She'd bought curtains for the windows and new cups to replace the chipped ones. Both looked like good quality, but not expensive brands. Except for the cat tree, she seemed to be using the money carefully. Alonzo slipped out of the seat and thumped onto the ground. It stretched, back arching, then reached a fluffy paw up to tap at Daniel's leg. He knew what it wanted and moved his hands out of his lap. "Up you get." It leapt up, then bumped its head into his chest. He sank his fingers into the long gray fur and enjoyed feeling the rumbling purrs as he scratched around the cat's chin.
"Hot, hot, very hot,"
Mrs. Kirshner murmured as she set the teacups on the floor beside them. She'd stacked four of her biscuits on the saucer beside his cup. They looked as though they had more cranberries than batter, but Daniel was starving and picked one up. Mrs. Kirshner, you used to be a part of the local historical society, didn't you?
Ooh, yes.
She settled back into her seat and adjusted a knit blanket around her shoulders.
When I move here, I have no friends. I meet lady on street, tell her I am lonely. She say, come join club, learn about country. So I do.
Creases built around her eyes as she smiled.
They were so kind. It did not matter that I do not know the country or could barely speak the language. They wanted to help me learn. They are still best friends. It was happy times.
Daniel nodded and adjusted his cup of tea. He knew Mrs. Kirshner and her husband had emigrated from Germany nearly 50 years before, and they had been a core part of the local historical society until death and illness had caused it to finally disband. He went out on a limb. Mrs. Kirshner, have you ever heard of a place called Craven Manor?
Ooh.
She made a series of muttering, tisking noises.
Bad house. Bad family.
And Flinton?
The lost town. Yes. You have been learning history, Daniel?
Her smile was so genuine and sweet that Daniel couldn't bring himself to tell her he'd been living at Craven Manor. He didn't want her to recoil from him. A little bit. Can you tell me about them? He asked, digging his fingers deeper into Alonzo's fur.
It is all very old stories now.
She picked up her saucer. The cup wobbled, and for a second, Daniel was afraid the arthritis in her hands would cause her to drop it. But she stabilized the cup and blew on the steaming liquid.
200 years old. Maybe more. Family lived in big mansion on the hill. A mother and 2 children. Myricks. Family had a lot of money. Dead husband was Duke, and their money make the town rich.
Mrs. Kirshner paused and sent Daniel a searching glance, as if she were trying to gauge how much to tell him. He gave her an encouraging nod. Go on. She narrowed her eyes.
Daniel believes in science. Stories from old are myths to him, yes?
Not necessarily. He didn't know how much to share, but at last he said, I believe in ghosts. She made another murmuring noise, and the teacup shook as she sipped from it.
Daniel is good boy, has open mind. These days, people do not trust in the old stories. They do not understand, so they think it all fiction. Myrick's family came from...
Vikings? Daniel prompted. She bobbed her head.
Yes, yes, Viking family, warlords. It is said a great king became a monster in battle, a beast with huge claws and gnashing teeth, kill his enemies in one swipe.
She mimed the motion, baring her dentures and swiping a hand through the air. Her tea sloshed dangerously, and Daniel rushed to steady it for her. A shapeshifter.
Good, Daniel, yes. Myrick's family became very rich, built mansion, built town, named house Craven Manor. Craven means fear, coward, yes? House was to create fear in people who saw it. But over time, meaning changed. People began saying it is a house of the Craven. Great warlord was long dead. Myrick's descendants grew sickly and strange. More and more they hid in their house and only spoke with people through letters.
Mrs. Kirshner adjusted her blanket again and shuffled her fluffy pink slippers. Daniel noticed she'd replaced her old holy gray slippers. She looked adorable.
Finally, the great Myrick's family is just 3, a mother and 2 children. The husband died young. Son was strong, but daughter was sickly. Couldn't see sunlight. It burned her skin like fire.
Another tisking noise.
Son went to new country for his studies. Mother stayed to look after daughter.
Daniel scooted a little closer. Do you know what Eliza Myricks was like? Was she a mean woman?
Oh, no, no. Very shy woman, very sweet, afraid of everything, so stayed hidden in manor all day. Afraid of doctors, but let one visit for daughter's sake.
Mrs. Kirshner huffed out a sad breath.
Then famine came to Flinton. Crops wouldn't grow. Animals went hungry. People ask why. Back then, everyone very religious. Very superstitious. Priest says they are under curse, that a witch killed their plants. They believe him. They look for witch. Decide it must be the little girl in the manor.
She was so young, though.
Daniel spoke before he could stop himself, but Mrs. Kirshner didn't seem to notice the slip.
Yes, yes, only 12. But villagers say she is ungodly. She never goes to church because she cannot leave home during the day. They think the sun sickness is a sign of demons. They say she is the witch and attack the manor. Take her back to the town. Burn her at stake.
Daniel grimaced. He hadn't expected Mrs. Kirshner to know all of the gory details, but she recounted them without hesitation.
When mother arrive, all that is left is burnt bones. She collect them in bucket and take them back to home with her. Very sad. Lock herself in house, never come out again. Then son return from school.
Alonzo shifted on Daniel's lap. He curled his arms around the cat to keep it from falling off, then resumed scratching around its head. What do you know about the son?
Bran. He was not good man. Very cruel, very angry. He loved sister and thought mother was to blame for death. He attacked her, killed her, buried her in shallow grave. Then he went to the town.
She gave him another searching glance.
Here is part people do not believe, but legend say he became great beast, like the Viking warrior in his blood. A monster and a shadow, breaking doors, killing when people tried to stop him. He left a great sickness behind him, a plague. It got into people, make them rot before they had chance to die. Some run into woods, but Bran catch them before escape. Others hid in church.
Daniel visualized the door, torn off its hinges, massive claw marks gorged into the wood. He was grateful he had Alonzo in his lap. The cat was the only thing keeping him warm.
They thought holy ground saved them.
Mrs. Kirshner shook her head and murmured something in German.
It did not. All who ran to church died that night. Every last one of them. And after he left, sickness spread through town, killing people who had hidden. When they realize what happened, people from other towns send help, send doctors and supplies. But anyone who step foot in town get the same disease. It grow in their veins like plant and kill them same day.
Daniel blinked and saw the corpses, bloated and bulging with the fungus. It had spilled out of tears in their skin. His fingers itched, and he wished he'd asked Mrs. Kirshner for a shower before sitting down. But by that point, he was too deep in the story to stop.
When they see the plague spread, other towns stop sending help.
Mrs. Kirshner drained the last of her tea and set the cup aside.
They not let anyone come to them either. No asylum. They shoot them when they see them come down the road. They scared of letting it spread, yes? Don't want their own families to die.
He nodded slowly. It sounded horrible, denying help to people who were dying, but if your life and the life of everyone you cared for was at risk.
Flinton dead in 2 days.
She held up two stiff fingers.
No people, no animals live. Other towns agree they not let anyone visit for fear of more death. It becomes ghost town, dead town, forgotten. All around is forest, so plants grow through town. Now it is not on map. People forget it is there. If history books write about it, they talk only about plague, no mention of Myrix or Great Beast.
She shrugged.
All that is left is stories told between friends, like this.
Thank you. Daniel's mouth was dry, and he finished his tea. It didn't help reduce the parched sensation. I'm glad you could tell me more about it. She folded her hands and gave a small sigh.
It's nice to talk about history. I miss it, yes? Wish Historical Society could meet again. But so few of us are left, and we have no money for room rental. But perhaps we figure something out. I may visit friends again, see if we can start meetings again, even for just a short while.
That sounds nice. Daniel stared into the dregs of his teacup. His mind was absorbed in the story, and he didn't realize Mrs. Kirshner was staring at him until she spoke.
Why Daniel curious about Myrix? When Daniel hear about town?
You
say you believe in ghosts.
She tilted her head to the side.
You like to hear ghost stories, yes?
He struggled for an answer and settled on a lame, yes?
You hear ghost story about Myrick's house.
She nodded, as though that settled the matter.
And you want to know more?
Yeah, that's, basically what happened. She reached across the space between them and patted the hand resting on Alonzo's head.
Daniel, stay away from Myrick's house. Bad place. Not safe. Don't want to be trapped. Not like Eliza Myrix.
He frowned. What do you mean, trapped? Chapter 23. Mrs. Kirshner knit her wrinkled hands together. Her attention was focused on the opposite wall, though Daniel didn't think she saw it.
You don't know story? Bran Myrix did awful thing to mother. He hate her so much, he trap her soul where she will never rest and never sleep. She is locked in a tower, never able to reach heaven. They say she will not be free until the seals on the door are broken.
Oh. Daniel felt queasy. He didn't realize he was holding the cat too tightly until it began squirming, and he quickly released his hold. Sorry, Alonzo.
Shh. I'm sorry. They say Bran lives on at Craven Manor. He is crazy, yes? He keeps his family with him. Not just mother, but also little sister. He knows hell will swallow his soul when he dies, so he lives on, and they are forced to suffer beside him. Forever.
She shuddered.
Bad house, bad family. You stay away, yes, Daniel?
Yes. He tried to imagine spending eternity trapped in a house that was slowly collapsing around him, all because of one man's selfish, spiteful whims. Daniel had been alone with Bran so often. Did the house's master have the power to trap Daniel's soul as well? Had he unknowingly been dancing with eternal imprisonment? Mrs. Kirshner stood and took Daniel's cup. He offered to help her wash up, but she waved him back down.
Stay, stay. Alonso is comfortable, yes? Daniel, keep him warm.
Good old Mrs. Kirshner. The cat always takes priority. Daniel managed a smile as he scratched under Alonso's chin. Sounds came from the kitchen as his host rinsed the cups and put them away. Then, with a grating noise, a rarely used drawer was opened. Daniel peered over his shoulder and saw Mrs. Kirshner returning with something clasped in her hands.
Gift for Daniel, she said, beaming at him. My grandmother make. Wards off bad spirits, yes? Made of salt and silver, blessed by holy man. Daniel, keep close. It will protect.
Daniel blinked at the talisman she'd dropped into his hands. It was made of a series of tiny silver beads threaded around a small glass vial.
A leather strap had been attached to it so that it could be worn as a necklace. "I don't want to take your grandmother's gift. It must be important to you." She patted the top of his head as she shuffled past.
"No, better this way. Daniel look after me, I look after Daniel. Good boy, good boy."
As he watched her go, a sense of disorientation swept over him. She'd clearly understood more than he'd told her. She wouldn't have given him the talisman if she didn't think he was at risk from Craven Manor.
"It's kind of her, but I won't need it once I move to a new house."
He turned the talisman over in his hands. It had a nice weight to it.
"I have no plans to ever return to Craven Manor."
He put conviction into that thought, but as soon as it passed through his mind, he wavered. Eliza and Annalise's story left him feeling guilty. He'd escaped a lion's jaws, and the smart thing to do would be to keep moving and not look back. Still, he couldn't help but feel responsible for the tormented family, especially Annalise. She'd become like a friend. The guilt continued to niggle at him during his shower. As he scrubbed his hands in Mrs. Kirshner's pokey, blue-themed bathroom, he looked at the issue from every angle. The manor and its occupants were all but forgotten. The police wouldn't help.
"If I don't do something, no one will. They'll be trapped there forever."
The thought horrified him, and the soap slipped between his numb fingers. He shivered and turned the tap on a little warmer. He would be well within his right to walk away from the situation. He had no legal obligation to help the Myricks family, but he already knew he would never be able to forget them. The knowledge that he'd left them to suffer would hang over his head for the rest of his life.
"You won't be missed if you disappear."
He stepped out of the shower and stared at his blurred reflection in the mirror as he dried his hair. "Mrs. Kirshner will be sad not to see you, and maybe Kyle will occasionally wonder where you went. But society won't miss you. No one is relying on you or waiting for you to come home. That makes you the best candidate. If you fail, no one else will be hurt." Bran's words came back to him.
"Things that die here have a tendency to linger."
Daniel thought he could face death without too much regret, but an eternity trapped on Craven Manor's grounds with its vengeful host horrified him. Maybe Bran wouldn't try to keep him chained on Earth. He wasn't family, after all, and Bran seemed to be obsessed with his mother and sister. But the risk still existed. Daniel spent the night in Mrs. Kirshner's living room, arranged on a bed of cushions and spare blankets. He tossed and turned, alternately staring at the streetlight's glow where it arced across the ceiling, and watching Alonzo dozing in his cat tree. As he lay awake, a plan began to form. It was crude and rife with ways it could go wrong, but if he could stay calm and act natural, he thought he might be able to pull it off. It all relied on maintaining Bran's trust. The manor's owner would be suspicious that Daniel hadn't returned that day, so he would need a plausible excuse for having stayed in town. He would also need to keep his mouth shut about everything he'd learned. Daniel rose as soon as the sun came up. Mrs. Kirshner tended to sleep in, so Daniel moved as silently as a wraith as he made two plates of breakfast in the kitchen. He ate his by the window and watched the people on the street outside. The apartment block wasn't in a nice part of town. A child played barefoot in the gutter for several minutes before his mother found him, smacked him, and dragged him inside one of the buildings. Most of the faces that passed by looked haggard and weary, infused with the kind of tiredness that comes from a lifetime of stress. Daniel wondered if his own face would grow that haggard if he stayed in the city. For the few brief days he'd worked at Craven Manor, he'd felt as if he'd escaped into a better life. His work had mattered, even if it was just to a ghost and a man made of shadows. He exhaled as he turned away from the window. He left Mrs. Kirshner's plate on the table and washed his own. Finally, he took the pocket full of cash, the proceeds from the coin he'd sold the previous day, and hid it in her cupboard, behind a tin of peaches. It might take her a few days or even weeks to find it, but the cash would support her and Alonzo for a while once she did. His conscience wouldn't let him spend the money on himself, but he had no compunctions in leaving it to a woman who deserved a better lot in life. He picked up the talisman off the windowsill. The leather strap went around his neck, and he tucked the vial under his shirt, then checked how it looked in the bathroom mirror. As long as he kept his jacket zipped, the talisman was invisible. Daniel silently let himself out of the apartment. City sounds engulfed him as he stepped onto the street. Two men yelled at each other from inside a store, and cars blared their horns. Daniel ducked his head and thrust his hands into his pockets as he half-walked, half-jogged away from the noise. He stopped at a general store two blocks away and spent the last of his money on a small bag of supplies. This is the right thing to do. He felt queasy and sweaty. Paranoia about touching the rot in the abandoned town resurfaced, but he comforted himself by recalling that Mrs. Kirshner had said the disease killed its host within a day. If he'd contracted anything, he would have felt it already. The clamminess was derived purely from stress. City became countryside, and Daniel followed the familiar trail down Tilbrook Street. The massive, gnarled oak at the end shifted in the wind, and its branches seemed to beckon him forward. Daniel turned and followed the flagstone trail into the overgrown forest. The woods seemed noisy that day. Birds and insects clamored to be heard, and Daniel tried to clear his mind as he focused on the sounds. Looking nervous when he arrived back at Craven Manor might sink the whole plan. The gates came into view sooner than he would have liked. He stood outside them for a moment to take in their rusted, deteriorated visage. The bronze plaque that announced Craven Manor glinted in the light. A manor to strike fear into people who saw it. A manor inhabited by cowards. He licked his lips and stepped through the gate's narrow gap. The maneuver became easier every time he performed it, but he hoped he would only have to practice it once more when he left Craven Manor for the final time. Daniel left the plastic bag not far from the gates, hidden behind thick bushes. Then he turned and followed the familiar track through the garden towards the manor. The anxiety-prompted sickness returned as the building came into view. Its dark stone walls, high windows, and insane mix of buttresses and extensions were overwhelming. He looked towards the tower and thought he saw a ghostly pale face pressed against the glass. As he stared at Eliza, she retreated into the shadows. A shy woman. A woman riddled with phobias. The crows had gathered in the tree and the stone supports around the front doors. Daniel searched for the huge, age-tattered bird, but Bran wasn't among them. He climbed the steps to the open front door and stepped inside. He'd forgotten how forlorn the foyer was. The void magnified the sound of every breath and movement. The chandelier barely refracted the light that struggled through the windows. Every object, the empty photo frames and candles on the mantelpiece, the fireside chairs, the high curtains framing the windows, were all suffocated under the blanket of dust. It was too dim to see the spider webs, but Daniel knew they were lurking, waiting for him to walk into them. Moment of truth. Will Bran believe me? Chapter 24. Daniel waited in the doorway for several pounding heartbeats, but the manor's master didn't swoop down from the higher floors. He tried to calm the shaking in his hands and stepped forward. Bran? Two amber eyes glinted by the cold fireplace hearth. Daniel felt a pang of relief and let a natural smile grow. He liked cats. Talking to Bran in his animal form would be easier than trying to lie to the man's face.